Honorable members, you are welcome. Let's welcome Mr. Bassett and his team. And afford them the opportunity to take us to the
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Chairman, we were last year, at the end of the last meeting here on this floor, the department was requested to engage further with HODA, in person with Ms. Alison, so he was also here to that. That in fact did happen, and to be clear, met with Ms. Sylvia, the Deputy Minister, which we would like to think back on that today. We also asked the department, well, the department offered to engage Section 6 of the Act, to who else can protect disclosures be made. Proposals were made during the public hearings that perhaps the Chapter 9s and some other institutions would be appropriate bodies to which protected disclosures can be made, and the department undertook to approach those three commissions and to come back to the committee. We have done so. We haven't had responses from all the commissions, but we're hoping by the end of the week, Chair, that we will have responses from all three of them, about the Chapter 9 institutions, those three commissions. And we are hopeful that by the end of the week, and I see this committee scheduled to sit on the board tomorrow and on Friday, and I'm hoping on Friday we'll be able to get an answer on our undertaking there that the committee wanted us to do.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Bassett, but we might need to reconsider Friday. I understand there's also a constitutional review committee meeting on Friday. So I don't know if you want to talk to the chair about the constitutional review committee, because it will impact any of us in the civil vote committee. Something you might want to raise to extension.
You are right. I think there's more urgent business here.
Thank you, Chair. And we've circulated what we call a working document. There were certain issues that were raised, and the department was requested to draft amendments. We've done so. I think we picked up one or two other things in that process, which we'd like to bring to your attention for your consideration. And that working document, I'm sorry, we sent it to the committee clerk, and the document we sent is in a whole lot of we do our work in these working documents with footnotes and strike-throughs and underlining. And in the email process or the document that came out in Cape Town didn't show all these. So our parliamentary liaison officer, Mr. Kinsey, made copies of the document. So that you have a true copy of what the document should look like, and I hope you've all got a copy of that in front of you, too, with your permission, and I'm going to ask Mr. Greer to take the committee through that document. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the document that we've handed out, that's the top left-hand side, it's marked working document. Possibly what I think I should do is maybe to take you through the document and at first then maybe indicate to you where the proposed new insertions and omissions are in the document itself. On page 3, you will see that under the definition of employee, which was a recommendation by the South African Reserve Bank, that the words "or receive" be inserted in that definition, just to make it complete, because words such as "works" or "work" were already used in the definition, and then you can get the words "or entitled to receive." One should also then, of course, include the words "or receive." So that was the recommendation by the South African Reserve. next page, Mr. Chair, under the clause 1E, with regard to the definition of protected disclosure. ODAC indicated to us that they were concerned with that amendment to that portion of the definition, to the extent that they recommended that we should include the word subject to section 9A in order to avoid what they have referred to as circularity. And then in Roman 1 of that part, they have also indicated that we should insert the word criminal, and that is in order to be consistent throughout the Act itself, because the Act then refers at various places to criminal offence, but not here. So we're concerned that that might lead to interpretation problems. So we have inserted that word there. The next proposed amendment is given on page 7, which forms part of the duty to inform the employee or worker. That is the proposed amendment, section 3B of the Act. The proposed amendment with regard to subsection 4 is merely a rewrite of the provision that was on recommendation of the South African Reserve Bank. We have agreed it was in fact an improvement on the existing version of that subsection 4. Then in subsection 5, Mr. Chair, the proposed new subsection 5 is a result of the concerns that have been raised by the Banking Association of South Africa. They have, for example, now we must take into consideration the proposed new section 3B deals with the duty to inform workers and employees, but they have indicated under certain circumstances it might be difficult to know how to get hold of the employee or worker. So our duty to inform must take cognizance of that and make provisions for that. And sometimes it might not be in the best interest of investigations, for example, criminal investigations, to immediately inform the employee or worker of the outcome of the decision of the investigation itself. So in fact, what subsection 5 then does is provide for those two scenarios. For example, in the proposed new 5B, you will see that it will not be necessary to comply with certain requirements of that section if it is necessary to avoid prejudice to the prevention, detection, or investigation of the case. At the bottom of the page, there's also a proposed amendment, and once again, it's just an improvement of the existing wording thereof. I would like to take you quickly back, Mr. Chair, to page 6. The proposed new section 3A deals with joint liability, and it indicates that when an employer, under the express or implied authority or knowledge of a client, subjects an employee or worker to an occupational detriment, both the employer and the client can be jointly and severally liable. But what we have discovered, and that is our recommendation at this stage, Mr. Chair, for page 8, then, and you can see the footnote itself, it wasn't something that was brought to our attention by interested parties, something that we have picked up ourselves, is if you look at the proposed section, new section 1B, it provides the board with the powers to impose certain remedies, but it was restricted to the employer itself. What we propose now is that reference should be made to the client as well, in order to ensure that the court, in line with the proposed section 3A, will be able to impose or order certain remedies in favor of the employee or the worker. I think the wording there is straightforward. I don't think we need to discuss the wording. It's just in order to fill that possible gap that there might be. On page 9, another proposal that was made by ODAC and that is mainly to ensure that if a procedure is followed to make a disclosure to an employer and the employer proposed or determined a certain procedure to be followed by the employee or worker, that procedure must be brought to the attention of the employee or worker. So the words to be included then is that the employee or worker has been made aware of the procedure by the terms of subsection 2A2, and that is the responsibility of the employer then to bring the internal procedures to the attention of every employee or worker. Page 10, Mr. Chair. This is where Mr. Bassett has indicated that in the beginning that the process of consultation is addressed by a portfolio committee and has commenced, among others, by means of the minister writing to the chairpersons of the commissions referred to or underlined now in the proposed section 8. We are still awaiting the responses, but we have already received a response from the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, and they have agreed that they be included in the Section 8. So at this stage, we would just like to draw the Commission's attention that although they are reflected there, we haven't received any responses yet apart from the one Commission. Hopefully, as we be able to
I think the meaning of the adoption of what's written there.
Mr. Chair, we have four procedures in terms of which you can make a subjective disclosure. One of them is a disclosure to certain bodies. We originally had the public protector and the auditor general, where you can make a disclosure to those two institutions. The recommendation is that the law here in order to ensure that an employee, instead of making a general protective disclosure, which has a bit more requirements associated with it, rather than including these bodies, so that within their ambit or within the sphere of their activities, one could report improprieties in your workplace to, for example, the South African Human Rights Commission. Then, Mr. Chair, on page 11, going over to page 12, is also an amendment to the exclusion of civil and criminal liability. The whole act introduced was then restricted to disclosures of offences being committed. That will for an offence in terms of this subsection hour to make the decision. And then, yes, Mr. Chair, that is the bulk of the review amendments that have been included in the document.
Just to remind members of the regular significant provisions that I think this committee would have to deal with is
honourable members. We want a break before he speaks so to sort out on the process.
Thank you, Chair. I think there were three main or significant issues just to remind the committee which would have to be debated. There were mixed feelings about whether there should be this new clause 9B in the bill in the first place. The request to Joe that we're typing it up so that we don't have that chilling effect. Try and reduce the chilling effect as was referred to. The other one was whether there should be an incentive for the making of disclosures. And then the third issue was the reporting of protected disclosures to institutions other than the ones that were mentioned in Section 8. And Mr. Dupree has dealt with those, so I just wanted to remind the members about those three issues.
For purpose of the records, if you say that an issue in this section, it doesn't say it. So just treat us as if you are ignorant. No, what you were saying, you said that the bill was in the other section. Let's talk about the substance.
Start with the proposed new clause 9B, or the proposed new section 9B, which is on page 12 of the working document. And in the bill that was introduced into Parliament, it provided that an employer or worker who intentionally discloses false information, knowing that information to be false, or ought reasonably to have known that the information is false, is guilty of an offence and is liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 2 years. That's the way the bill read when it was introduced into Parliament. And there was quite a bit of debate about that, whether there's a need for this provision in the first place, and whether it wouldn't have a chilling effect on the making of protected disclosures. And I think this is something that the committee said it would like to think about, and like to debate at a later stage, and the committee might reach that stage now. Anyway, the department and then as Mr. Dupree said, Cassandra made a presentation on this particular clause and said it would be better if criteria were built in to make it more difficult to institute a prosecution here, because there was always that worry or concern that this proposed new provision would have a chilling effect. So what the department has done since we last met is to have a look at Cassandra's proposal as well and discuss it with our principals, and the insertions that have been made since the committee last met, with the insertion of a new sub-clause 1B, which said that an intentional false disclosure must have the intention to cause harm to the affected first party, and the affected third party must have suffered harm as a result of that disclosure. And then an added protection mechanism is to require that DPP that to institute a prosecution under this proposed new section. So a decision will be made at the highest level, bearing in mind the sensitivities and complexities, whether a prosecution should be instituted or not. So that's in summary where we are on that particular one.
Honorable members, I see Honorable Sharp, Honorable Wilkinson, Honorable Hall, you can come to the meeting and close your mouth.
in first.
Okay, proceed on the motion.
Chair, no, thank you. I didn't follow the incentive provision. Maybe you could look at that as well. That's still something we feel quite strongly about, the inclusion of an incentive as per NEMA, as per other acts. But Chair, obviously the 9B is still a major concern. This is something that when we drafted this act, we decided at that stage not to include the criminal provision, mainly because of the chilling effect. And let us just remember what ODAC said. South Africa is unique in as much as there is a fear in South Africa of losing one's job. We have high levels of unemployment, high levels of poverty, and there is this fear. So by including a criminal sanction, even though it's been tightened up, you still are then having a chilling effect which will discourage people from coming forward to disclose. We've seen a lot of disclosures in the recent past with a lot of allegations around state capture, but Chair, there's still a lot of maladministration that needs to be addressed, and we need whistleblowers. The whole government about this is to strengthen the protection for whistleblowers. Chair, it's not in line with international best practice. The SA Law Reform Commission did not support it. If we look at other jurisdictions, if we look at Ghana, other African countries, they have consistently said no to a criminal sanction for whistleblowing. So what are the alternatives? The alternatives are to use your existing legal processes, such as disciplinary action for a worker. There is internal disciplinary action. There is also civil remedies for where, in terms of the memorandum for the criminal sanction is to protect reputational damage. For reputational damage, here you know, as a lawyer, that you can sue for that, for defamation of character, for defamation of reputation. So, Chair, we still feel that there is sufficient protection in our law at the moment, and we are still not in favour of 9B. It's a very contentious issue, and we don't believe that this will go. We believe, in fact, that this will discourage whistleblowing when this word gets out, that in fact, and we see it, we're very well drafted, and we see it tightened up, but this is a very serious issue for us, Chairperson, and we fully acknowledge what ODAC has said. These are people on the ground that are working with us on a day-to-day basis. They have said to us, do not include a criminal sanction because it will discourage workers who, in any case, in South African context, if you read their booklets, there are many workers that have lost their lives. I was reading again this morning through whistleblowers. So it's a very serious threat in South Africa to include this criminal sanction. We do not believe advances what government is seeking to do, and that is to improve the protection for whistleblowers. Thank you.
So you want to absolutely time the rights of the whistleblowers at the expense of the other people. Can't one argue that a sanction would ensure that people don't rush and blow the whistle before they are ascertain the fact, because the damages may be too ghastly to contemplate. What do you want to do, say?
Now, yes, Chair, I do hear what you say, but surely in the light of high unemployment in South Africa, the possibility of losing your job through disciplinary action is a sufficient sanction, we would believe, in the first step. Secondly, the possibility of a civil remedy against yourself, or even a criminal remedy for crimen injuria, if you were to defame another body. So, Chair, we do believe that there is sufficient deterrent already to prevent a person from willy-nilly going. And though these were issues we considered when we drafted the original Act, Chair, if I remember correctly. You might be able to help me with that. But we did, and I'm not sure where this, I'm still not persuaded as to who's the thought behind this criminal sanction. Where does it come from? So, Chair, I'd like this much stronger.
No, I think you've made your point.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, we have to do it.
the Honourable Schwartz, I just want to say support all the submissions made by Honourable Schwartz, and I would find myself in great difficulty supporting this bill if none be remains at all. We say that we have zero tolerance for corruption. We say that we're serious about fighting corruption in this country, and then when we introduce a whistleblowing, the bill to protect whistleblowers, we put in a criminal catch. The contradiction is too much. And the effect of this will be for people, especially those who are not well-resourced, it will just discourage them from blowing the whistle. Because the consequences for them will be too vast to contemplate, as you say. There's plenty of other remedies available. Those set up by the Honourable Squad, and also if you make a misrepresentation, if you make a misrepresentation that is untrue, that you know is untrue, that causes harm, or has potential for harm, there are criminal sanctions as well. There's plenty in our law already that can deal with a person who intentionally discloses false information. I think the 9B will undo any good that this bill supports to do. And while
I'm busy,
I would have a lot of
difficulty. What would you say to the fact that even before the police investigate, there must be reasonable grounds to believe that the crime was committed, and whistleblowers are just free to tell their story, and that aspect, you know,
doesn't get lost. No, Mr. Chair, I can't agree with that proposition of yours. Firstly, if it's a frivolous whistleblower, somebody who has perhaps some sort of personal extra ground with their boss or with a company or whatever, some difficulty, it's very easy to pick up from one from the other. A very cursory investigation would tell you whether there was in fact any seriousness or malicious intent. And secondly, it's the job of the police to investigate those things. That's their job. This is going to encourage people to blow the whistle for corruption, for serious offences, for economic crimes that cost people jobs and cost our economy. So weighing one up against the other one, I think the in favour of whistleblowing weighs much more heavily. There are other remedies available.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to just make an input on false disclosure, 9B, to say that my feeling is that it must end. And why I think it must end is because if you live in a fair, in a country that is based on democracy, that emphasizes fairness, everything should have balance. Where you find that there will be incidences where people are actually reported on information that is false and it affects their reputation, it will be unfair for us to open up that space. We need to close that space so that South Africans also become more responsible. Because in the process of fighting corruption, you need to actually also be fair. You need to actually have a society that is comprised of people who are responsible, who understand the impact that false information can have on people and their lives. We have not actually made a study and an audit of people who may come forward to come and bring their stories. That were actually even put in papers that were found not to be true. But the fact of the matter is, once such stories are put in papers about you, and along the way you manage to actually prove yourself to be correct, it will also be difficult sometimes to find that the paper will put you on the first page to say that they didn't do it. We'll get you in the middle of the paper with some small paragraph let's say this person is not doing, but the fact of the matter is it will have harmed you and your family. So as we move forward as South Africa, and we are actually saying that we want to protect whistleblowers, because it's not the entire strategy of fighting corruption. It's one of the strategies of fighting corruption, because we've got so much of systems and mechanisms that we've actually built as South Africa to fight corruption, and this is part of it, which of course these whistleblowers must be protected. Another thing is, what is coming out is that people can have legal recourse. Legal recourse is expensive. And even if you get legal recourse, if there has been damning evidence or a damning story against you, to go and clear fence yourself, you may actually sue if you have the money to do so. But the fact of the matter is to go and cleanse yourself of what was actually put unfairly on your shoulders. It's not easy. And one other thing is, in terms of civil cases, there have been instances that I personally know of where you find that a senior manager in government department is actually accused of something. And then at the end of the day, when they want to actually sue for defamation, the advice that they would get would be that their case would be weak in court, because of the fact that it will be based on the principle of the right to know of the public. The public must know, but the public must know what is correct. But this is what is actually half the time told senior managers in government departments when they think of the direction of defamation. And this is why you don't see too many cases of defamation in the papers of senior managers who have been harmed by false disclosure. So my point is that 9B actually should stand, because it creates a balance here. There's no specific group that needs to be protected and the other one will not be protected, and we want to call that a democracy. Democracy is fairness. Democracy creates balance. And here we are saying, let's create balance. Unless we are thinking it's correct for people to create stories about others and damage their reputation, and therefore leave those people on their own to see what to do with their problems. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you. I want to agree with the president. I don't think to have this house anymore. We cannot seem to be protecting people who in democracy give what. Secondly, I may be a poor man of straw. What are you going to gain to sue me for having done it? There is nothing, absolutely nothing. You say you're going to sue me civilly. I don't have anything. You only can be harmed, that may be caused, or by my false justice information, which is false. Knowing that it is false, because it's been very clear that I know the information is false, and I know I deliberately, with an intention to cause harm, with the intention, knowing that the information is false, I know, which means I'm a liar, or ought to have reasonable to have known that information is wrong. And with intention to cause harm, I have an intention to cause harm. That's to me. I have an intention to cause the harm. I go out, and where the perpetrator from will actually cause harm, if you suffer harm as a result of that false intention, and with my intention to cause harm,
then I must be protected. I don't think it's correct. Otherwise, it makes a mockery of even our criminal justice system. It means that I am not being protected to do something to suffer in hell, and that's why I'm not protected in any manner. I know that I'm going to cause harm if I beat up someone. I have an intention to beat him. And you compare that with I go out and say this person has done this and he suffers. Initially or otherwise as a result of my what? Knowing and with an intention to cause them harm. And that the harm is suffering. And I must be protected from that? With due respect. I think that is not correct. People that are doing it, I think it is moderate enough. I would make it so moderate myself. I would have been more harsh than that. Thank you very much.
I think two things that I think must be addressed is first of all this issue to say that criminalization will bring a balance. I think that cannot be true. If we look at the disadvantaged position a whistleblower finds him or herself in at the outset, we then take into consideration that the whole purpose of this bill and the primary act is to try and balance the scales at that stage. So for us to consider criminalization, we will have to conclude that the whole regime of protecting whistleblowers is now to the effect of taking the little man who's up against power, if the disclosure is indeed a good disclosure, is up against institutionalized corruption and criminality, which adds another layer of him or her being in a seriously disadvantaged position to start with. So for us to consider criminalization, we will have to come to the conclusion that the legislative framework as it stands takes the scale to the other end. And in all fairness, I think nothing that we have learned through the public participation process and through the information given to us by the NGOs can lead us to such a conclusion. So first of all, we must not use the issue of we must balance rights as an excuse to criminalize. Second of all, the proponents of the criminalization clause, I think, lose sight of the fact that if you do not make a good disclosure in good faith, you in any event should not get the protection of the law. And maybe we should rather address that situation. So they go from the assumption that all disclosures are accepted as good without dealing with the merits of it. And that obviously cannot be the case. We create an environment where people might feel safe if they so decide to make a disclosure. But that does not mean that the mere fact of making a disclosure must lead to a situation where we accept everything that is being disclosed as fact. Obviously, it's the beginning of a process of investigation. And if indeed it is found to have not been a good disclosure for whatever reason, then there can be another process to say, but you do not qualify for the protection because you either knew that you were disclosing false information or you, I don't at all likely or reasonably to have known, because it's a subjective test, points to at best gross negligence. So while there may be an argument meant to be made out of about intent, the fact is we must not lose sight of the fact that the disclosure is not accepted as correct and then hung with right from the outset. So there is the possibility to deal with this in other ways. And in conclusion, I must share the sentiments of my colleagues who say there's other options but criminalization within the law for people. If you want to take the risk of losing your employment, your rights as an employee, by making a false disclosure, then that in itself should be enough. Thank you, Jim.
Would it not be correct that getting informed by belief that there is corruption in government, and these officials who already cannot make meet, some of them don't even qualify for housing. And if you put the burden on them to say people who falsely accuse them, they can sue them. And someone was saying they won't even have the right, the money to pursue those civil cases. Are we really not creating an untenable situation for people? I would say the normal legal system is not adequate to deal with it. We need another informal system somewhere to prosecute people. Shouldn't we make it difficult for people not to issue information about other people unless they are sure that what they are saying is
true? Chairperson, my response to that will be that nothing that was placed in front of this committee by way of public participation point to a situation in our country at this stage of large-scale abuse of whistleblowing. But the only thing we've heard is the disadvantaged position of people contemplating making a protected disclosure. Nothing, nobody came here to tell us, to give us information, statistics, about false information and the impact it has on the one hand government, for the individuals within government. So this whole Section 9B is based on a theory that it may be detrimental to people, to the effect that we must take a stronger stance. But I challenge anybody to tell us, in respect of the public participation process, what information did we receive to necessitate a stance that there's this whole-scale abuse of whistleblowing.
Chairperson, I think as law makers, we must correct it to prevent coming up with unintended consequences. Section 9 seeks to differentiate between whistleblowers who are protected by the law and mischievous enemies who seek to destroy people's lives intentionally. So I really want to align myself with that this section.
Thank you.
would be to bar us from applying our mind as the lawmaker. I think the whole intention of this might be is what we would call a recourse. It was uncertain, never found one without a recourse. So we need to generally create a recourse for them. For those people, because you know, there are people that are financial. I know a lot of cases in medical work where a person will just paint a particular person with a particular brush for a purpose of making the person not to be viewed in a particular way, either for employment purposes or to be viewed in a better life in society. And that is certainly different every day. So we should not create legislation to perpetuate the situation that we already see on the ground. So this 39 will provide a record. And of course in any event where the person is intentionally gave a wrong information. Actually I agree with all of you and that it could not have been whether they made it right. And you can't take it the line of a civil civil way. Because most people who may be doing this are people who may not have money. But because of a civil suit is to gain, part of it is to get money from what they are suing for. So the person does not have money. You're suing gets to be a magnification of your own effort by zero. So that's why we need to make it a crime. So that people must be afraid to play around giving information with the intention that it will be. Once you decide to get into this thing of whistleblowing, you must be sure of your facts and you must be also doing it in good faith that what you are saying is correct. But if there is any other intention that you want to damage the reputation of somebody, then you must be criminally liable. Thank you, sir.
If it's a crime to give false information or to institute somebody from there, is going for a stolen car, and I know very well that I have not stolen it. And I'm also waiting for this to happen. And the bottom. When we look at this, we look at the purpose of the bill. Look at, say, to regulate some, to protect an area, a person who has disclosed information regarding unlawful or irregular conduct. To provide immunity against civil and criminal employees from the disclosure of information which shows or can be shown that a criminal offense has been committed. Now, I know very well that no criminal offense has been committed. I know very well, I think I would agree with Honorable Bond. If you are just innocent, it's a very creative. But this provision says you are not innocent. You know very well that it's not called true, and you deliberately what you want. It means whether you somebody has bribed you to do so for his own interest, has paid you to do so. And another thing that if you do that, you are worried about being people losing a job. Maybe you're getting more money from the person who wants to destroy this organization than what you're getting from the one. We all know. I mean, they are part of them. Let's even take this thing not from government. Let's take it an innocent, small item to destroy, keep secret, to do any other thing with it. Wrong. But I think personally, and I want to emphasize this on the other side, that
I'm not happy with the way it is going. Because I think that when you say you have to cause harm, and that actually harm has been caused, I think that is too mild. I think if I give information, if no harm has been caused, if I have an intention to cause harm, I think that should be enough for a criminal person. It doesn't have that person has, I would suggest that has actually suffered harm to be removed. Because when you put a button on the person, that it must show that actually harm has been caused. Even if and it may be difficult to prove that it's been caused. And I think it is enough that he has an intention to cause harm. Even if no harm has been caused. If I have an intention to kill somebody, even if that person is not dead, it's still a criminal offense. But if I have an intention to kill and attempted to do so, and the person doesn't die, the person must have died. This one is that actually harm must have been suffered. And I think that part has to hold the remote.
Yeah, now we are introduced.
Thank you, Chairperson. If we are a society that advocates for democratic principles, I think the more critical thing can be the throughput. Here we are actually debating a situation where somebody is not truthful in a way that actually harms the reputation of others. I don't want to believe that we are actually saying in so many ways that we shouldn't actually bother ourselves as legislators to put legislation in such a way that it actually makes people not to do it. Because whatever we're going to put down should become a deterrent so that people don't do it because they know there are consequences. Unlike if we're going to continue with the situation, almost saying that we are actually encouraging South Africans to just say anything about each other, we'll decide along the way as to who is going to get protected in terms of the truthfulness of the statement, because the fact that you do that actually caused a lot of harm. For me, I truly don't want to protect liars. Because when you talk about false distortions, it's about, you know, talking about people who lie about others. It's as simple as all that. They are really mixed in the discussion, lying, the thing. Why would we sit here and waste time and want to come up with legislation that says, you know, a liar must be protected? So let's not bother about the liar, we'll just see what you do with the liar afterwards. The rest of the matter is we need to come up with systems that are actually treating and behaving towards South Africans in a way that demonstrates fairness. There shouldn't be certain sections of South Africans that are exposed to certain processes which actually become an impediment to development of people of South Africa if we are not careful. We have so many stories which are stories that create a lot of turmoil in South Africa. We try to build a nation also that is diverse, which is very difficult. You know, we are a different society compared to a number of societies in the world. Ours is a different kind of society. And if we are not careful with whatever basic principles and values and norms that we're going to be building into our own system, it's either we will successfully build this diverse nation, or we're never going to actually manage to come up with a nation from the diverse society that we are actually running. Thank you, Chairperson.
Now, there is a principle of deterrence in law that you should actually deter people from doing wrong, other than saying no. Let them do the wrong, because the wronged people will have a remedy, which remedy may be very expensive for the wronged people. why don't we want to deter people by attaching a criminal sanction? You know, I can give you a personal experience that there were some parties at the dawn of our democracy who would go and plant a story about a member of another party, and when they don't have the facts correct, when they realize that they are in trouble, go and employ an investigating agent to try and find something against that person. Now, if that employing agent comes with another story, the victim doesn't have the resources like the accused. Now, I think that's the point that is being raised here. Why do we want to protect liars at the expense of people who won't be able to victimize themselves? If you look at the politics of this country, there are lots of false accusations being made that there is corruption here, there is corruption there. But nobody goes to the police station and lays the charge of corruption. But there is so much talk about corruption, and nobody is being checked about corruption. Why do we want to complicate the situation? Mr.
Chair, we need to see this against the background of the state of whistleblowing in South Africa. If we look at the documents that ODAC has provided, there is under fire. I urge everyone to read that.
You know, they are going to be the premise.
Yeah. Just to have an understanding, that they say it's a disturbing reality that the physical safety of whistleblowers is at risk in South Africa. So we're not just talking. Look, that is what we've got away. We've got away the whole issue of whistleblowers and the culture at the moment, which is not to blow the whistle because of intimidation, because of people that have lost their lives. So, Chair, by adding this element, you are, in fact, discouraging those few people that might want to come forward. Now, remember, we are talking about an employment situation, only an employment situation, in the private sector as well. That is massive. That is huge, where there is so much intimidation, and you've got, it's a small David against the Goliath, basically. That is your work. So, Chair, just come out to the issue, and we're not only talking, I understand if it is a blatant liar, that is criminuria. There's your deterrent already. Your criminuria is there already. But what we've got here is you've got a whistleblower who thinks he's got information, he goes out, and the documents are there, their lives are destroyed. Not only those that have been killed, their families, their intimidation. Here you've got someone who believes. But he says, well, you ought reasonably to have known. So you think, and you've done as far as you possible, then later says, no, no, the information you had there, you ought reasonably to have known. So you're not consciously lying. You've done what you can, but it's on a negligent basis here. Ought reason, that deeming provision is also unacceptable. That lowers the standard, even though you cause harm. The harm is caused objectively. So, Chair, there are some very strong arguments against this. Let us just bear in mind, and I'll urge the members of the majority party to bear in mind the culture that we are trying to protect whistleblowers, and the Balancing Act is the existing criminal action that has got. If you lie against someone, there's a criminal in Europe. That is there. That is the deterrent. In addition to that, if you are found to have, you are not protected, it's not a protected disclosure, then you've got a disciplinary action by the Goliath against the David. He says, you start getting from that, you start getting suspended, you start getting shifted around. All those extra elements. That is why Pisata came. And they said, look, we've got concerns, but let's try and tighten it up. So, Chair, I can't take it very further, but maybe we can hear from ODAC, who work on the ground, as we try to reach that balance of the acceptance. Thank you, Chair.
To allow Kaka and I want to hear the strategy. What are you saying? I don't know what you mean.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you very much. So, the committee are asking a very important question, which is what do we do about bad people who do bad things? What do we do about liars who, in the public space, lie about other people? And I would like to shift the discussion and say, I don't think that's what this bill is about. That's the problem, but I don't think that's what this bill is about. This bill is about protecting business people. The Law Reform Commission, when it looked at this issue, did look at the international best practice. They did come to the conclusion that if you do deliberately or recklessly disclose information, you don't qualify for this. You would be guilty of criminal defamation. You would be guilty of crimen in injuria. You would be guilty of fraud at common law. So that's the situation that we have now. We already have those protections against bad people. But let's go back to the good people. What situation do good people find themselves in? They find themselves in a situation where it's high levels of unemployment. They find themselves in high levels of inequality, where in any workplace there's a hierarchy and it's difficult to see how. But in South Africa, even more so, because of our high levels of inequality. And we have significant levels of poverty. They may have gotten improved over the last 20 years, but poverty is a serious concern for people. So for people who are in the workplace, remember this is about the workplace, this is not about politics. You may look at this through the lens of politics, and I understand that because you're politicians as well, but this is about the workplace. This is about people arriving for work and clocking in and coming to work and seeing things that are impropriety. And if I can just refer you to act, remember it's not, I mean, everyone focuses on corruption. Corruption is an issue, obviously. But it's also about health and safety. So health and safety of an individual, that's an issue that people are worried about. The environment of being managed, that's an issue for worse people. Unfair discrimination in terms of freedom, again, an issue. So if you're raising issues around the environment, or race, sexual harassment, this is the legislation that you're doing that under, okay? This is the ordinary person in the workplace. Now, that ordinary person in the workplace, I mean, you must know this, except for the very wealthy people and some middle class people, they live paycheck to paycheck, right? If you lose your job, you lose your house, you can't pay your school fees, your kids go to a school, the consequences of losing your job are dramatic. There's no safety net. I mean, I worked hard on the social security system. I can be confident there is no safety in this country in terms of social security, unless you're under 18 or you're over, in which case there is. But for most working people, there is no basic income grant or social grant that you can apply for. What we find, and we found over 15 years of running a health plan, okay, day in, day out, is not that people are wanting to come to work. It's that people are scared. It's that people are saying, I think I should do this. I think it's the right thing. But all of these things are going to happen. Do I have any protection? And I think the point about what happens to people when they're older is a very important one. Yes, they're losing their job. One of the stories we tell in the book is about a guy who was the one who tells the story of his brother, in fact, the one who had that experience. And his situation was, it was the situation where unfortunately he raised concerns and he was assassinated in his driveway. And the reason he raised those concerns, and I quote, from his community. He said that his uncle's son had been on Northern Ireland, and he said that when his uncle came to New Zealand, which was where this guy lived, that they learned from him that what you have to do is take control of your situation. And this was was the advice that God was given. We didn't give that advice. We didn't say go to work. We didn't. That's not what we did. That's what he told us to go. And that was the promise of God. He died. So when you talk about what the situation is for people who go to work for, they're not coming forward. The real ones, the good ones, they're not coming forward. They're scared. And the number of the people that are coming forward is dropping. Our statistics show that the number of people who are prepared to come forward and talk about issues, talk about the environment, talk about sexual harassment, talk about inequity in the workplace, those people are scared because they don't get proper protection. The law does not properly protect. And this amendment is intended to do that, and it does. It goes along with increasing protection for whistleblowers. So that's why we work with this, that's why we support this, that's why we think in general, this is a great law. But then when I read that, you first, all of you have to, in organization, know how difficult it is to break down. Anybody in this room, whether it's a journalist or other groups of society, you don't have to speak to them. You know the consequences. If you speak truth to power, we stand for society and we speak truth to power. If you do speak truth to power, something generally happens. Unless it wasn't true, or you didn't speak the truth to power, actually the consequences are severe. If you don't speak truth to power, what happens to your rights and dignity? Where is your right to dignity if you have to live a lie? If you have to come to work in the morning and pretend that your workplace is fine. There's no harassment here. Don't worry about that toxic waste being dumped in the river. It's fine. Yay team. That is a violation of your right to dignity. It's a violation of your right to freedom of expression. So we're in a situation where we're saying, yes, there are people out there, and yes, there are mechanisms to deal with those bad people, but think about the good people. And there are good people out there, many of them. There are things that are wrong. Adultery is a good example. It's wrong, but we don't make it criminal anymore. We don't lock them up.
How many customers do you want to sell? There's been a challenge. We have an important society. People are not at the same level of development. And we may still have lots of people who want to settle school. People who may be inclined to be malicious and start this approach, and then we may just open another floodgate that will really work to make government unworkable. But before I open it, Director Basel, from what we are here, what do you think must be done with the
with this approach?
Representing the department and government, the law, the provision is in the law for the very reasons that we heard that we as a department have given, but we've heard very good arguments come up by some of the members of the committee. The department hasn't got anything to add to that, but we are in the committee again tomorrow and on Friday. Maybe we could also do this, continue this debate tomorrow. I don't know if we want to continue the debate on this matter today, but we could take it a bit further tomorrow. There is a proposal maybe to have a look at the wording. Some members have made proposals to have a look at the wording. We would like to consider those proposals, and maybe with your permission we could take this debate further tomorrow.
Well, we
Okay.
Chair, I want us to relate the story of David and Judah in its proper context. You see, the reason why it was acceptable is not only because David was a small man, that he was a giant. It's also because of the correctness of it. If David could have met up Goliath in his feet, it would have been something different. So we are here trying to protect whistleblowers who are genuinely bringing issues against him. Maybe we should separately talk about how we can be able to protect whistleblowers.
Who is Goliath in this story? Who is the Goliath?
I suppose Goliath would be the one upon whom the false information is being portrayed, delivered. Yes. So simply because it comes through by a smaller man, it must just be accepted. But I am saying that should not be correct. We should actually put a remedy on people who deliberately, you know, this thing of being deliberately bringing false information. That's a major one.
I don't understand with the Goliath. The man who is said to be David has good God. It depends who is behind him to bring forth information with an intention of bringing down in that organization or the government. This has happened in various countries where members of the other intelligence services want to bring down a particular government. They've got their own so-called David system. But let's not talk about it. We agree with their report. I think I thought Kevin would not where we live. We agree that 100% all the good people who are trying to expose the bad things that are happening. So I mean, we agree. What we are saying is that let's deal with those who will not be genuine. And how do you deal with them? Now, the question is that they it to me has not been addressed, except to say that there are other laws. You see, when you are dealing with workers, there is this act. They're not all lawyers. They're going to read this thing as it is. If they know in this particular thing, if you're a lawyer, you have got all the other laws. Oh, this one is common here, that one is common here. What about lawyers? What about all the territories? This instrument that I'm carrying with me protects me from giving information. But it also shows that if I lie, I've got a problem. The same instrument. Now, a lawyer will know that if this is not done, then all other, they don't read all the other laws. You only, even lawyers don't read all the other laws because they've got a case to go and look at the other laws. So I think we need to see each instrument on its own right and say, what does this particular instrument say? It doesn't harm to have as many as possible if we're trying to inhibit people from doing something wrong. And I say that what I was asking and requesting this question to do is to make it easier, not more difficult, to remove the thing as actually suffered harm. Just that part of it, and to say that if Rwanda has got an intention to harm, even if harm is not actually suffered, if my intention is that I must make you suffer, then I must be guilty. And this is very small, I mean, quite small. You say that what is 2 years or a fine? Oh my God! When you look at the actual intention to harm, innocent people are covered. If only wrong and with an intention to harm,
and we can't distinguish the protected group at all.
There's a proposal that maybe we should live in subsection A, where or ought business need to have known that the information is false. You know, if we believe that imagine, a person will say, I didn't know that the information is false. But when you apply the standard of reasonable, you come to the conclusion that no, that's not enough. This person is forced to have known. Reasonably know. So still, deleting this still put the Goliath it means we want to defeat Goliath through false pretenses.
I work on the outline and I get a lot of calls from the people. Most of them don't know if what most of them don't know if what they see is wrong or not wrong. The purpose of whistleblowing is to bring what you think could possibly be wrong to the attention of the superior person in your organization who could investigate that so-called wrongdoing or not wrongdoing, who could investigate the issue and then come to a decision that if it's wrong, to eradicate the wrong. Now that happens. That happens in most organizations. But I am saying, when a person came to me and she said, I'm a new employee in a government department. I was taught this is how I'm going to do this.
I think with respect, we must be thinking. I gave them permission.
This is what I've got to do, step one, step two, step three. My supervisor is now telling me, no, don't do step two, you leave it out and you just give me the money and then I will sort it out. What am I supposed to advise that person? She doesn't know if it's wrong, maybe the person is doing the right thing with it, but she must have bring it to the attention of a more superior person to actually investigate it and then decide whether it is right or wrong. I think the confusing thing with corridor talk and spreading rumors with actual good whistleblowing. And I think that's the confusion, and therefore I think 9B is not good.
But can we really say that this legislation is looking at South Africa as a whole, which is diversity, or that we're really being informed by some experience in urban areas and we want to address this experience in urban areas? Shouldn't we say it's the onus is on the person who wants to whistleblow to make sure that they know the facts are true, and if they don't know, that they should reasonably have known, because we must deal with the a reasonable person. That is the legal standard that is there. So if we are going to introduce other standards, now we're not going to get into trouble. Now I'm starting a question. Honorable Hall, Council Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Mpunga, and Honorable Mshaki. Now I want people who must now tell us how should we conclude this message. Do we delete something or do we create something new? What do we do? Because we don't want to make a law for Johannesburg in Devon or Cape Town and Bloemfontein. We want to make a law for South Africa.
Thank you. At every level. For people who are not necessarily sophisticated, but this is not aimed at people in the answer of rules and habitation. And you cannot ever put an onus, in my view, on the person who's a whistleblower. They have seen something that they feel that needs to be wrong and they want to report it. The onus can never be on some hapless individual who, because they have an innate sense of right and wrong, an innate sense of justice, the onus should now be on them to first ascertain whether what they believe to be correct or not correct is in fact so. That is why you have whistleblowing legislation. That is why you report it to the people who are supposed to be in a position to ascertain whether it's in fact right or wrong. And the mere reporting thereof should never, ever place you in a position where you find yourself in trouble. Otherwise, you're really discouraging people all over the country from every spectrum, every walk of life, from ever blowing a whistle, which is totally in a position. The people now who blow the whistle are sophisticated people who have resources. You want to widen the net. You want to make it narrower. There's no room for criminalization of any nature for whistleblowing. We are not there.
Assumed by everyone.
outside, when you are driving a car, it won't pick up, you will don't knock out. There are so many things that are acceptable that you don't need to be protected against. You know that it is wrong and it is right. Instead of being wrong and wrong in general, you have to be negative. That's it. Therefore, there is no need for anybody to specifically so weak that doesn't need protection about doing something, knowing with an intention to harm. I think we agree on that. Let's agree on the question that an ordinary innocent whistleblower finds complicated. But a person who deliberately, with an intention to harm, should not be protected. And this instrument must be shown in one instrument. In other words, if I read this text, I must know very well. I'm not going to read all other apps. I read this one, which affects me. I'm a whistleblower app. Here it is, and I'm going to shout. I know I'm going to shout, but I must be careful. I must be sure that what I'm saying is correct, and I don't have any intention to harm. Now, having said that, there is this portion which will make it difficult to prove in court where the affected party has actually suffered harm as a result of that. In other words, I can lie about me as long as I cannot show that I have been harmed. That is the portion that I would like removed. In other words, you're going to say, you know, first of all, I must say that he has an intention for harm. I prove that. Now, having done that, I actually did suffer harm. Otherwise, you can lie about somebody even if you can't show that you suffered harm. And I don't know in what way, whether financially or according to the amount of the reputation, what harm are we talking about that he has actually suffered. So that portion, I personally feel that there's no need for. And I think that it is enough to say with an intention to cause harm, full stop to the other part. That he has an intention to do so. As I said earlier, that if I have an intention to kill somebody must not necessarily have died that I am killing him.
Reasonably know a form of intention in the court. If you were reasonably, you were expected to be reasonably have known. Is that not a form of intention?
Correct. This is a form of intention. In fact, it's an emphasis on the intention. Question is, what must happen? I say that we must stop at the intention. We must not go on and say we have actually suffered the intention. You may prove that he had intention to harm, but that doesn't, that you must prove that. That is the problem I'm talking about. I'm talking about the intention of proof on the second. On the second.
I think it's abuse of the scripture, but there's so much to do. I'm Christian myself, and we will continue to run the race of the said God with perseverance and goodness. But I think the discussion around David and Goliath actually excludes people of other beliefs and religion, and when it's put in public space, I think it becomes discriminatory with the democracy of this country. So what I'm just trying to caution us is sometimes we want to impose on tolerance in how we interpret life in terms of who we are, being influenced by who we are by our beliefs and religions, and to put it in public space in a way that is unfair. So I'm hoping we will hear less and less of David and Goliath, which is something that can be really truly analyzed. Because you know sometimes you can be called Goliath conveniently so, because you should be Goliath in a convenient manner to work out certain things in a particular way. And I could actually say that whoever is Goliath today can become David tomorrow. when you actually interpret and analyze Goliath in other contexts, that Goliath immediately becomes a minute little thing like David. Basically, what I think we should do is that it's
You are raising a very important question. Because if you try to find out who was David, he was a Jew, and who was the Golan, he was a Palestinian. And David will say, Jehovah is behind him, against Goliath, who Allah is behind him. So we are introducing a very dangerous religious argument into Parliament. And even today, the conflict between the Jews and the Palestinians has not yet been solved. So I think let's stay away. We have enough experience as South Africans and as Africans. Let's use the examples that are within the grasp of our people and not create other difficulties, because this matter of the Palestinians and the Jews is a serious matter that the world is addressing. Let's leave it out and deal with the other things.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. One thing that we need to actually just be clear of is that malicious damage to lives of others, for us as legislators, it's a no-no. We're not going to come up with anything that almost sets the message that when people's lives are being damaged, it will be okay. And we are on the same page with you about whistleblowing, because we all are fighting corruption. It shouldn't actually be interpreted in a way that almost says, you know, we want to weaken the whistleblowers. Nobody wants to weaken whistleblowers. We want to actually, unless there's something grossly wrong with the legislation, because now we have a legislation in front of us that's supposed to actually strengthen the situation of whistleblowers. If you're saying this legislation is not managing to do so, it means we need to go redraft it. But at the same time, whatever happens is false disclosure. We want it to appear so that there is no gray area in the legislation. We have had to deal in so many ways with legislation that you would hear people saying, you know, there is a gray area in this regard. And one thing is a gray area, that's where the unfairness begins. So here we are actually saying, build it up, create a system that will actually be a system that protects everybody. And it will protect everybody to the extent that we will allow you to blow the whistle where there is wrongdoing. And by the way, wrongdoing, we're not saying black people or white people are doing wrong things. We are saying as South Africans, whether you are black, whether you are young, whether you are old, if you are doing something that is corrupt, you need to actually be prosecuted. And we should be helped by people whom we are actually labeling in the legislation as whistleblowers. And this is why we are actually creating a protection mechanism for the whistleblowers. We want to continue to do that, creating a protection mechanism for the whistleblowers, but we shouldn't actually leave another situation that also is important. That creates unfairness. That actually damages the lives of so many, living like hanging and saying people will see how to support themselves when that happens to them. It will be unfair.
Intentionally against somebody who hasn't done anything, that person can also, besides suffering reputational damage, can also have his be affected in terms of attacks on his person, attacks on his family or hers. So there's that side to it as well. And I'm going to ask, the issues that have been raised in favour of the clause are cogent, and there's clearly a concern about what's happening, and that's why it's been proposed that these provisions be put on the statute. To, I don't know whether Mr. Dupree are going to add to anything that I've discussed.
That is we are dealing with an employment situation. That
whether you are a worker, and that is the David versus Goliath. And by the way, I've got no objection to that. But from my constituency expects me to raise those issues. And if the Constitutional Court raises those issues, then why shouldn't we? But that's my perspective. We respectfully differ on that. As Christians, we can differ on that. And we can have coffee and discuss that. But I will be raising those type of issues. And so we've got freedom of religion, and I know that you're anti-expression, and I know that it adds to the flavor of the...
We have freedom of religion.
And expression.
But then all religions, we mustn't come across as if we're using one religion as our guide.
Well, sir, my constituency expects me to be. And I understand for freedom of religion, but my constituency expects me to raise that. Just as Mr. Lange Jarku said, she's a Christian, she raises the issue.
We have not made any mistake.
Okay, sir. Wonderful.
In hindsight, we're
absolutely. But let's leave that aside.
And I was like,
yes.
Don't start with religion. You can go on the whole thing.
We've had lots of chats about that. We've had lots of chats, and we love one another, and we continue to have those chats.
But do we agree that we go and speak over this message?
Yes, sir, but I want to emphasize that all members need to be aware of the other remedies fully, so that when we are considering what's going to 13 here, that we are fully aware of what the other remedies are, with the capacity constraints you mentioned. But it is fundamental that when we passed this act in the beginning, we considered these issues. And there was a reason why we didn't consider them. Why are we considering it now? That's what particularly, and we're going to sleep on it, but in a culture where the statistics are showing less and less people are coming forward. So, Chair, if we're going to, and then tomorrow when you're looking at alternatives, can I just process-wise,
yeah.
As you are suggesting amendments, the way we've done it is you have options.
No, it's honourable members, it's fair that we listen to one another, because otherwise we'll send
the
wrong message.
I think Dr. Kuwan is suggesting an option to remove that, and then one has those different options, and at a certain time you will then consider those options. At a certain stage, obviously, we put an option which would be to delete that clause, and that is an option which one would consider.
So I hope that we are not saying that they must put options.
No, we can think about it.
We can debate options, but at the moment we are not saying that go and set options in there. But think about options, let's table them for debate, and maybe it's not your task to think about those options. It's for members who think that there's a need for options.
So table them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Honorable Suman.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm afraid that I raised my issue already ruled. Your ruling will help me if I consider alternatives, if I have been clarity in my mind. Because it is true that people do give false information. It is very true that people are harmed because of the false information. So my clarity, which I am what are they suggesting could help the victim? Because when we talk about whistleblowing, it's a term, I won't go into the Bible and David and Torah, I'll go into sport. A whistleblower is a referee. And a referee in sport is given tremendous power. It is said that his decision or his defiance. And there are many people who suffer in sport because of the decision of the referee. And we are seeking a way of helping those that are victimized by the powerful referee. So if we say, in this instance, the powerful referee can go on referee and people get hurt. And they say, I'm not protected. I'm very uncomfortable. I would like to go and sleep over this thing and think of a way of helping the victim. And if they do help and they can express it enough, then at least I am relieved. So I just want to hear this. How are we going to help the victim if we remove it?
That question is a takeaway question.
Yes.
It must help us as we sleep over this matter. Because we mustn't agree for expediency. We have to make a law that we will not be ashamed to stand up and defend. Can we leave the matter there? Alison, I hope you'll be here tomorrow. So we also want you and your colleagues to sleep over this.
Thank you very much for
a very interesting debate. Thank you very much. I think the quality of the debate, the standard was so high. Is there anything else that the pastor wants to say, or do you think there is?
Yes, I think we would like to revert on the Section 8 of the commissions, and I hope we can have a conversation with that as well.
Maybe if you can do it also in the form of an explanatory note or an expansion of your note, so that we have something for.
Okay, honorable members,
you are well excused, but thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.